Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 4 of the Ed Non-Tech podcast. I'm Dr. Matt Stranick, and my esteemed colleague is
Dr. Doug Reed.
Absolutely. And we are very glad to be here with you today. We kind of had anticipation of perhaps getting this together over the weekend. But then first I had some things come up, and then Doug had some things come up, and then I think Prince Edward Island also had some things come up on you. Is that about correct?
Yeah, this has been the Canadian weather delay. It's storms and cyclones have been happening this week.
You're dealing with cyclones and what I assume are the effects of warm temperatures in the coastal climate, whereas we have gotten full blast of winter here. It began on Friday evening, this past Friday, and it stretched out. I made some, reference to it on my Instagram as like the 3-day blizzard, but in actual fact, it did span Friday, all of Saturday, and into a significant part of Sunday as well. So in my mind, it's just, I look out there and it's just like, I've been here almost 5 years. I've been here 4.5 years, and this is significant. So there's that going on over on this side of things. And I think, Doug, we wanted to sort of have like a little mini intro about what's going on with each of us. So I'll just even proceed to say that it is winter here. I am grateful to be in Shikwemigulu. I am very, I've taken on some personal learning. I made some Amazon purchases, which doesn't make me any kind of hero, but I've got some books. I've got some books coming up by a local author, Gary Gottfredson, has a new poetry book out, which I'm super excited to read. And I've gotten another one of his coming in the mail. And there's another book by, I'm gonna fail on her name, Celia Hag something. She's from Kamloops. She spent time in Ontario, and she wrote a really definitive early book about the Kamloops Residential School. And she now has a new book coming out, in light of, the recent, things that have come to light since 2 years ago, since the residential school, the discovery is here. Anyway, you can't even, and to say discovery, I mean, that's a broad word as well. But anyway, there's a lot going on around here in my part of the world. And there's a lot of energy, and there's a lot of things going on in my life, as there are in everybody's life. And I guess I'm just in a spot of gratitude for what appears to be the very beginning of winter. And I have a secure and comfortable domicile around me in such setting, which a lot of people don't have. So I think probably that's what I'm going to end with here. Doug, what are you saying, bud?
For me, what's going on here is we had record high temperatures last weekend, and it's going to be 18 again this weekend, but we get all that cyclone wind, so that's going to be a little bit of fun. So here in the unceded Mi'kmaq territory that I live in, we have that kind of weather happening, quite different from what you've got. And one thing I learned this week is I went in a different direction. I found Lucy Maud Montgomery has another book that I've never read. I didn't know that was a thing, but there is a book.
I feel like just anecdotally, was she not one of those more prolific authors of that period? I mean, I believe she's one of those sort of authors who she first started publishing those books like what, late 1800s, early 20th century. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So, and she was pretty prolific. I mean, I think if I was just to guess, there's probably something like 15 books plus, right?
Oh, yeah, at least 15.
And but you discovered one. So you've read all of them besides this new one?
No.
Is that what you, okay. Oh, well.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't, I found out yesterday that somebody in her family handed a book to the publisher, a manuscript to the publisher, the day she died. And it sat in limbo for decades and decades and decades, and then it just got published a couple of years ago. And I didn't know this existed.
Is it like another Anne story, or how long did Lucy Maud live? Did she live like to be, you know, an older person in her age or
no? Well, she was 67.
That's fine.
Yeah, I feel like that'd be just fine. I'd be happy with that.
For the day, back in the day before they had like presumably less and not as good medical treatment, I'd say that was pretty, you know, pretty substantial.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so done. So
between that and Mastodon, the Twitter exodus has started, right? People are getting off Twitter, and Mastodon seems to be what a bunch of them are going to.
I'd like to say that I ran far ahead of that. I've been melting down Twitter accounts for the past 8 or 10 years. This time with finale. Frig. Elon Musk and his ridiculous platform. I follow the comedian Bobcat Goldwave on Instagram, and he put a thing up on it, and I was like, when you got that, you know, that guy, a comedian of, you know, just ditching your thing. It's anyway. So Mastodon. Okay, I know them as a really powerful heavy metal band from the southern United States.
Yes.
But so you're telling me this is a social media platform here, bud, is that I'm hitherto unaware of?
A young guy from Germany put it together. And it's like a microblog. It's the same kind of concept as Twitter, but it's decentralized. So anybody can set up a server and run it, and you have people that join your server that can also connect to other servers. It's all decentralized. It's federated or something is the phrase that they're using to describe it. And and they've only got a couple hundred thousand users so far, but literally yesterday there was a post and it's like, Stephen Fry's here now. So they're starting to announce when people are making the leap off it.
So have you set one up? Are you going to set one up?
I've set up I have a username and stuff, but I haven't set up a server. There's a guy here that has set up like the oceanplayground.social is the name of his server. So it's all about the maritimes and stuff. And then you can go to other and talk to other people wherever. And it's kind of like Twitter from about 12 years ago before all like a lot of the viciousness really became a thing.
Before the public discourse went from low to extremely low.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's, so that's what's going on in your world. Is that a fair snapshot of what's been up in the world of Doug?
And I thought that would lead in nicely to our topic, which is MOOCs and non-traditional avenues of learning, because I've been doing some non-traditional learning this week.
That's dope, man. No, that's awesome. And when you put that to me, I did my doctoral study, which turned my successful defense was 5 years ago, 2 months ago. It was about social presence in those kinds of courses. So I just sort of was looking at it in terms of you've set this up and I'm sort of gonna be able to allow you to speak to the points that you raised in your document. And I guess if you have, questions or want to see, my perspective on it. But honestly, I feel a bit separated from it at this point. I do strongly believe that, open courseware and these kinds of, experiences, whatever you call them, these platforms and these, for pay or for no pay or whatever, I just think they're going to remain with us in some way or other. Is it a regretful catchphrase? I don't even know that it's a regretful catchphrase, a regretful acronym. I just think it simplified a lot of things for a lot of people. It crystallized a lot of things, and if you want people to become engaged with e-learning in tandem with a more powerful internet, an exponentially powerful and more ubiquitous internet, then you can do worse as in terms of what these, you know, ended up looking like. So, you know, there's lots of very valid criticisms of them and about them. And, you know, the relationship that they have or had, yes, maybe is more the term, with the, you know, quote unquote bricks and mortar institutions and continuing education programs and things like that. I feel like I'm going on a bit of a diatribe, and I feel like I'm being a bit unduly defensive. I guess I'll just say from my standpoint, Doug, I'm sort of happy to weigh in as and where wanted, but, you know, I'd be interested to hear, you know, how and why this particular topic, you know, the informal learning for sure. I'm interested to hear that because I feel like there's some stories there. And I guess why would we add MOOCs onto that? I guess is just a question that I would have. So,
yeah, I'm biased with this topic because a partner of mine, Dr. Nathaniel Ostashowski at Athabasca, he and I built one before the term MOOC was a thing. The term hadn't come up yet, and we had built one and put one together.
Can you be a little bit more, I hate to jump in because I'm so curious and you're so going somewhere with that. When you say you built one, can you delineate that a little bit more in terms of what did that look like and what was your conception of it when you built it?
When Nathaniel first talked to me about it, I thought he was nuts. But he's amazing. So he explained
shout
it to
out,
me.
Shout out to Nathaniel.
Shout out to Nathaniel. And then I jumped on board. Like, he's got so much energy. It took him about 30 seconds and I was hooked. And what we had is they had a whole bunch of grad students at this university, and their technical skills with the modern, whatever, social media 2.0 or whatever, web 2.0, whatever they were calling it then, the students weren't there yet. And the tenured faculty weren't touching it. And it was like, well, they're a distance university and they're not using Twitter and they're not using Facebook and they're not using social media of really much of anything. Like, they dabbled, but they really didn't. So he had so the opportunity.
It was LMS bound is what you're suggesting, I guess.
Not just LMS bound, because they still put books in the mail and mail them to you.
Man, I'm a friggin' of the mind that I wish that I had even some of my grad and undergrad books that somehow shifted out of my life. I mean, I think you should be able to opt in or opt out. I think there should be a robust print option, but not mandatory. So,
yes.
But, yeah. Anyway.
Right, but no, it's what works for you as the learner, right?
That's
And I don't want any of my old books because I've moved so many times. They're heavy. Like, they just weigh so much.
I fill suitcases, like luggage suitcases, with books, like shifting between apartments. And my dad has helped me move like numerous times. And he's just like, one of the last times he's just like, Matt, why do you keep putting books in your suitcases? I'm just like, what else am I going to put in a suitcase? You know?
Yeah.
I ran out of clothes. I don't know.
Yeah. So what we did when we envisioned this, it was, we didn't have the central, like the central repository for us was kind of the, like a one web page with here, go do this thing or go watch this video and do this activity.
So you're actually talking about a decentralized connectivist type course.
Yes. That's before connectivist was a made up word. That only came out later. And I have some issues with that, but that's okay.
Everybody has issues with it. Like, George Siemens has issues with it. Stephen Downs has issues with it. I mean, everybody who has ever been around the term connectivism, you know, it's not even like they're arguing about it. It's just, I don't know. I think it's cool. I don't know if it's necessarily something like, I got to subscribe to something and believe in it in order to see its value. I don't think it's like one of these things where I got to like it all in or no. I don't believe things work that way.
I'm a cherry picker. I like this bit and I like that bit.
So when you're talking about like one of these distributed type courses, as it sounds like you're onto, you know, right previous to the nomenclature or the acronym culture, whatever. I still see the value in, it's like a scavenger hunt, right? You know, like when you do your K to 12, we had a thing like you're teaching them the text, like, yeah, have them do a scavenger hunt, have them go find a file, save it to their thing, bring it back. Yeah. You know, there are days when I wish I could just have had the opportunity to do a fraction of the stuff from K to 12, some version of that, you know? Anyway, I'm rambling off on the side here, bud. But so tell me some more about this experience then. You got it. To what level was it done? Did students ever take it or what?
There was funding involved. And if you finished all the things, your name got put into a draw and you got a free iPad. And what we did is we had a little video, a couple of minutes explaining what we were doing. And we tied each type of social media tool to a type of travel. So we had cars for one day, we had airplanes, we did some video on a boat, we had bicycles, we had like people skating, like I went around. You know, if you hold up a camera and you skate around in a rink, everybody gets motion sickness.
Sorry, dude, what capacity were you working on this project?
My buddy asked for help, so I helped him.
I still haven't looked at even so much as your LinkedIn page, dude. So it's like maybe you worked at Athabasca. I don't know. So you're just saying he was working on this thing.
I had a little consulting company then.
See, this is the rich narrative detail with somebody of my, you know, particular bent requires, man. Okay. You had a consultancy.
Yeah. So
what was your consultancy called?
Wayfinder Education Group.
Dope. I like it. You should revive that somehow. We should get some like retro Wayfinder shirts, you know, printed up for this thing.
Oh, I got logos and I got all that stuff.
You got all the branding from the graphics dudes and whatnot. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm just totally just throwing
I'll,
you.
I'll send you one.
Please do. I'm just throwing you all the distraction now. So really though, about this proto pre MOOC or whatnot.
Yeah, it's.
How many students ended up taking it? You know. You don't know.
It's 38 or 42.
That's that man. See that? Those are the small successes that build onto larger successes. Like for me, I just remember back. Can you pin a year roughly on this work, Doug, that you were involved in?
Oh, jeepers. 2009, 2010. No, I can't. I'd have to go back to my LinkedIn. It's on my LinkedIn.
No, man. That's dope. That's dope. If you're talking about that era, 2009, 2010, yeah. I mean, that was me in my second or third year being an educator, working in the College of North Atlantic Qatar. And that would have been when I started just kind of grabbing PD Wiki as something to start sharing documents and stuff, both among colleagues and also with students, you know, as the institution was sort of going through vendors trying to procure the proper LMS, you know, so while that kind of multi-year process, administrative process was happening, it's just like, well, you know, there are these miniature websites. For me, that's kind of my ed tech origin story, I guess you could say, because I started doing those in the B.Ed. program. And that was actually sort of the thing where it's like, curriculum, instructional design, whatever you want to call it. And I know that they're different and distinct. But, you know, this whole area that we're in, with a lot of variety and variance and, you know, strong opinions amongst the people who participate in it. So for me, that was it. So what you're describing, like, that's of the same era, right? When I started realizing, like, using these sort of smaller web-based applications and whatnot, it was viable, right? It could actually work. It doesn't seem maybe like much now, but, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, the internet was quite different. Like, what's a more antiquated term than Web 2.0? I can't think of that. I'm hard-pressed, man.
World Wide Web?
It's slathered all over my doctoral thesis. Web 2.0 tools and social media utilities.
Digital like immigrants?
Yeah. Okay. So that was your
bubble.
So that was your experience. So you were onto me. So you have some personal lived experience with this, which is henceforth, I guess, partially why you wanted to bring it in here today. So can you make the link either in terms of a question or in terms of an observation, question or observation between the two? So you are now going through this whole thing about informal learning, which I hope you are willing to describe. Can we attach this now to the MOOC concept, or, you know, should we try?
What I really wanted to get at was the concept of traditional education and traditional education offerings. Because there's a lot of learning to do in a MOOC, right? Like, you can learn tons of stuff, but it's not traditional. Some people fight it, and I don't know why. And one of the little cartoons I sent you was, tradition is just peer pressure from dead people, right? We've always done it this way.
You have loaded this thing with graphics. I'm just scrolling through this. Yeah. This is dope, man. I was starting to play with the WordPress for this a little bit in advance, and I'm like, I'm actually going to use the gallery feature for a couple of these.
This is how my brain works. And it's like, we have all these traditional things that really don't suit most people. So we force everything to alternative modes. Okay. Whatever the alternative educational offering is, but that's only for the kids that need extra help, or the kids that don't fit in the regular program, or the kids that are have a life that where this doesn't fit. Like if they're like competitive dancers, so they have to do another type of curriculum. It's like, why do people fight things like MOOCs? I don't get it. It drives
Okay. And this is not meant as a question of a pejorative nature. I'm literally just trying to guess again, because I've heard so much chatter and discourse, and most of it's less than discourse, you know, as to this whole thing, like, well, you know, it was overhyped or it never happened. Are you saying that in terms of like MOOCs as being a positive assist in this situation? Are you talking about this? Okay. That's fair. It's sort of like, you're right. And a lot of the rep that, these kinds of courses, and again, I don't know that you necessarily, I came up with a new term instead of MOOC. I'm not going to call it MOOC. I'm going to call it, I put it in the show notes. I have a new preferred acronym. But I mean, open, you know, courses of a synchronous, asynchronous, whatever kind of nature, they're with us. They're going to remain with us. They give you these providers. I mean, Coursera, the others, and edX, they're still there. You know, a lot of the, you know, whether it's through procurement of larger, you know, corporate interests or whatever, the offering is going to remain more or less as it is. You've got an excited puppy dog there.
Yeah.
We don't need to cut that out. I refuse. That's a human moment, dude. I don't know. I think they're going to persist, and whatever we call them. And so this is where we're talking about informal learning. And I keep thinking like PLAR is something just really cool. Mm-hmm. And again, when I kind of look back at the place that you and I both, you know, used to work, there's some really strongly committed people interested in opening that up and expanding it and almost treating it as a matter of pedagogy, you know, in and of itself, almost as its own thing. And I think that's fascinating, the pedagogy of PLAR. So I think, you know, especially for folks who come from, I don't want to, you know, like non-traditional.
Non-traditional,
like non-white WASP, you know, mainstream, Euro.
Not middle class, upper class. Whatever. Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, like I should be so broke based just strictly from a numerical standpoint. But because I'm middle class Matt, I got lines of credit, which apparently are pretty vast. I mean, not everyone has these things. Not everyone has, you know, and it sounds facetious the way I'm saying it, but it's just, it's ridiculous.
It is.
So, I don't know. Anyway.
But it comes back to that traditional word that drives me nuts. Like a couple of the images I shared was from the Nova Scotia Agricultural College in 1913. Because I'm from Truro, Nova Scotia. That's where the Agricultural College is. Now it's whatever, the Dalhousie University Faculty of Farming or Agriculture or something. But this is something from 109 years ago, and it's short courses for farmers. It's here's how you do these things, and it's you don't have to come for the whole semester. It's come for 2 weeks. It's come for a week. We'll give you the train ticket. We'll pay for your train ticket. Here's where you can go get food. We'll put you up. And it was all about helping society and helping these people learn because they didn't fit into that regular structure of 13 to 15 weeks. So some of them is really interesting. And they had ladies' courses. Can you believe it? They had ladies' courses 100 years ago. It's, oh.
Primarily goodness. In stenography, one would assume, or
no, it's a little too small for me to see.
Well, that's dope, man. I appreciate these artifacts. I know yes. from the last episode, which I didn't know before, that you, in fact, are a history major, and I appreciate these artifacts here. My best friend in Fredericton is an archivist with the provincial government.
Oh,
and
nice.
I mean, he doesn't tell me stories, but he tells me just sort of what it's like sometimes working with these documents and some of these requests to come in. And I mean, it's a real art to the archaeology of these kind of documents and presentations, right? So,
yeah. So 109 years ago, ladies could take a course on dairying, horticulture, poultry, domestic science.
I wouldn't mind taking a course on dairying or horticulture.
Well, man. The guys get to take a course on road making, soil cultivation, farm machinery, right? Like it's stuff that people needed to know because back
y'all can go with that and I'll help the women with the milking and such. Okay. I mean, to each their, you know, thing, right. That's I'll take the dairying and the horticulture, please.
Yeah. I want domestic science. I want to know what that is. I don't have a science degree. I think it'd be great to have one in domestic science.
So you like go after these credentials and things. Speaking of formal, informal learning, are you currently going through any of these sorts of things? Or I guess, first of all, can you describe your informal learning as of late? And then can you say, you know, are you doing any of these accreditations or short?
Right now, right now, I'm not because I've just got a new job and holy moly, the learning curve on that job was intense. So
I haven't had time. Congrats on the new role.
Thanks.
And may I say, it is always a maelstrom of anxiety and stress starting a new role.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not like that for everybody. Maybe that's just me. But...
No, it isn't. It's me too. So, like, I'm still learning stuff on the side. Like, I got a new hand plane. And it's one of these big, long number sevens. So it's about 22 inches long. And I'm learning how to build workbenches. And I'm learning all that stuff, but nothing that's going to give me a piece of paper or a credential.
See, I would say that, yeah, that's awesome stuff that I don't want to say I'm never going to learn, but I'm just like, I've always admired people who are both interested in that stuff and are good at it.
I'm interested. I never said I was good.
Oh, you told me you make a lot of, you said last time you make a lot of firewood.
Yeah, I do. I make some other stuff too. I have made like the desk I'm at right now. I made about 25 years ago and somehow I've still got it. But I like learning more. I want to do better. Have you ever seen those river tables where there's like the two pieces of wood and like the end grain is there and there's like resin in the middle and all the fancy dancy stuff? I want to make one of those.
I'm a person who goes into the furniture store. This is literally happened with my son, you know, my then 9-year-old boy, and I'm like, it was dark. It was like, for some reason we were there. It was like, you know, like 8 o'clock at night. I'm like, now we're going to go to the furniture store. I'm going to buy a table. We're going to buy the one that's on sale. That's got the nick marks on it a little bit. And then, you know, floor model. Very good. And then we're going to buy the chairs that they don't all quite match, you know, but it's like, son, we saved $160 on that transaction, you know? Like, what you're describing is a holistic, humanistic connection with these objects that we fill our lives with. And I'm just like, what's the, pasteboard monstrosity of the day that you got, you know, at your friggin' city furniture, you know?
Oh, I get it. But what, like, one of the charts I sent you from... Safapore et al. Is they talk about five different types of teaching and non-professional. Yeah, so it's flipcast, gamification, case study, self-learning, and social media. And I am big into the self-learning. That is my spot. That's my
job. You seem like you're good at it, though. You seem like you're very... I don't want to say like an autodidact, because I think an autodidact literally teaches himself even without like necessarily too much instruction. Maybe that's wrong. But anyway, I can see why you would like that based on what you described. That's
And I'm a social constructionist, right? Like I firmly believe there has to be a learning artifact at the end. That's how I learn the best. So if the learning artifact happens to be a table, great. If it's a pile of sawdust,
man,
that's a thing too. But I need that.
Did you just use the term social constructionist? That's dope. This is like, man, I'm on 9 months of not having a job. So when people are like just casually sort of throwing in these, jargon or whatnot, such as you might hear in your local educational institution, I'm just like, do tell, right?
That's you're gonna mention why I used it.
You're going to mention Seymour Papert's and all that stuff, right? Dope.
Yeah.
And then we can have the whole constructivist versus constructionist little mini conversation, which we're totally not going to have now because I feel like we're starting to go long, actually. But we could.
And I love this because I get to have that conversation with you.
I'm just grateful that, you know, I can go outside and, you know, not just start screaming at the sky. I'm just like, any day where I don't resemble like the most horrible kind of shut-in, it's like, that's a good day in my world, you know.
That's a good day.
Yeah, and the Habs are playing against the Canucks tonight. I don't know. Do you follow hockey at all? Do you care or no, not really?
I like a good game.
Okay.
To
well,
be honest. It's, well, if it's entertaining, then great. But nobody's like, given me a ring. Nobody's given me a cash prize at the end of the season. So I'm just going to enjoy a good game.
Yeah.
The Flyers. I hate the Philadelphia Flyers. I don't know why. I just always have.
They have the best mascot in hockey, as far as I'm concerned. Gritty.
Yeah. Can you name another mascot? He's got a good PR agent, that's
Finn,
for sure.
Finn for Vancouver. I was in close proximity to Finn a couple times when I took my kids to see a couple games. So that's something. And I'll bet you there's even a MOOC on Coursera or edX about professional sports or whatever hobby you care to get into, whatever kind of, you know, I'm gonna cop to having had aspirations of writing a noir novel recently, and I still kind of, you know, go away at that. But one thing I sort of saw and I actually planned was, like, I could take these MOOCs, you know, and kind of facilitate a social interaction wherein deliverables are associated, people critique it, and I'm like, it's an asynchronous course, but still, I mean, I ducked in, I threw a couple things in there, and I'm like, okay, four or five people looked at this thing, like, in, you know, like, somewhere in Michigan, somewhere in the Philippines, I mean, whatever, right? It's like, so I failed to see the harm, honestly. Like, and for me, it's just like, I, you know, step back from it because my creative interests are being met in other ways right now. But the point is, it wasn't any less of an experience for having only, you know, dived in for a couple of weeks, you know, and still had some interaction and still furthered the sense of the project. There were still artifacts from that project in terms of, you know, a Word document or whatever. And some of that, you know, may see the light of day. But it's like you say, right? I mean, it's a whole matter of having this tangible thing at the end that's really quite magic. That was one of the things I enjoyed about being a communications instructor. I mean, you know, you could say, well, it's just a generic business letter or some kind of report. I would argue that, you know, if it's an authentic thing from the student's mind, whatever you want to say of the format or the content, that it's a genuine educational product, you know? So anyway, a bit of a ramble there.
But that ties in so nicely with a tweet I shared with you from at Exploding Unicorn. And it just says, me, what you do at school today? 5-year-old learned about dragons. It's like, your class learned about dragons? It's like, I learned about dragons. I don't know what everybody else was doing. And it's just, that kid learned what he wanted to learn or what she wanted to learn, right? Why can't we do more of that? Why can't we individualize this? So instead of the standard boring form letter, business letter that you got to mail out, put some real detail into it. Put it in what you want. Make it interesting to you. Make it authentic and engaging.
Well, follow more opportunities wherein, you know, students can sort of choose their own scenarios and maybe don't be so strict or tight on expecting, you know, a particular kind of assignment. Maybe allow for some choice and variety. You're going to build up a lot of more goodwill with the students if you do that. I'm not going to start talking learning styles because I think that's, you know, complete gibberish, but
good, because if you were going to say something else, we were going to have a different conversation.
Every time I've gone into some seminars and some things at jobs, and as soon as, like, Colm's learning styles, I'm just like, so you're saying that the ones who learn auditorily just shouldn't, like, ever have to challenge their visual senses? I mean, anyway, we're not even going to go there. The point of it is, I'm looking at that tweet right now on my other monitor, on my powerful new computer. 64 gigabytes of RAM. I finally, the only thing is now, I'm getting a bit locked out. My Camtasia license, I think, may be limited to my laptop. So I'm going to have to, I guess, find a path to do that, which will hopefully not involve spending more money. But if I have to, then it's just what you need to do to get a production of this magnitude and quality into your hot little hands.
Right on.
Dude,
so sounds like those steps are happening. So that's
cool. Have we got any more to say at this point?
I know we talked about alternative ed a little bit.
Yeah.
I'd like to see it more mainstream, because if it works for the students that are whatever, not the norm, not their traditional, and it works for them, maybe it could work for all the ones that are in that traditional jar right now.
Okay.
Just make it better.
I had some very awesome experiences at TRU the last year and a half that I was there, working with a cohort of students who were not of the mainstream. They were on a, alternative means of getting into the university. And these were the workplace education students. And I regret that I, don't have the name of the program in front of me just now. But through that program, I ended up working with a couple of instructors pretty closely about, having them do WordPress work, and I've mentioned this before. It was the kind of thing where you could just see it seamlessly going off in a quote unquote mainstream setting. It was like during COVID, these students had the skills by the end of it to, build a WordPress-based vending self-serve, curbside pickup thing for the food counter that they ran, right? The food shop that they ran. So I don't know. Like you say, lots of less silos, man. More overarching collectivism. Is collectivism a word in education?
I don't know, but the getting rid of the silos is a windmill that I have been tilting at my entire life. And I'm going to keep doing it.
Silos.
It's not a windmill, but it's.
Tilting at windmills. I haven't read enough of Weller's book yet, but I like that image, tilting at windmills. That's.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, honestly, Doug, I would just like to say that I've enjoyed any conversation I can to talk education whatsoever on here with you. Again, I guess probably we're going to aim to be doing this within another week, give or take. We're going to still try with the weekly thing here.
I want it to be weekly, but Canadian weather is Canadian weather.
Well, in that case, so I guess what I'll just say is now that my computing capability is kind of more, it's as good as it's possibly going to get. I've upgraded the internet. I've upgraded my computer to the full extent that I'm able to now. So now I think next time we do this, we're going to try and do it using Zencastr, which podcast people who do actual podcasts on a regular basis will be like, yeah, that thing that everybody uses. And I'm just going to be like, that thing that I knew about for a while and forgot about, and then this dude at TRU reminded me about. The thing about it that's going to be, I think, extra cool is it'll help get this into the, Spotify and the cloud-based pod services and, just sort of extend the range of interactions that this show is capable of reaching. So it's always a two-way interaction with this thing. And so things to come, right?
Right on. And you get to have some informal, non-traditional learning to figure out how Zencastr works. So Right on, the whole path of today's podcast.
I'm optimistic. I feel like there's going to come a point not too far from now where when the whole aspect of getting the show online is no longer a learning curve, I'm sort of wondering then what tech paradigm, you know, is going to manifest that we have to contend with as the show kind of moves forward. You know, it's going to be like, oh, you know, we have these kind of problems, and now we got these other kind of problems, moving up problems.
And if we were keeping track of this, this would be an interesting research paper to publish.
I hope to work in an academic setting again, doing something, Doug. I'm an independent scholar at this point, so I'm just saying, I can write a paragraph, and sometimes even two. So,
and my PhD supervisor said, "Do not publish unless somebody's paying you. Get paid and then do the publishing."
I like blogging a lot. Blogging makes me very happy. But.
Oh well, that's okay. Awesome.
It is right on. So much awesomeness. I truly I enjoy this a lot, and looking forward to seeing what the next one brings.
Next time.
Okay. Take care.
Right on. Have a good night.
You as well. Bye for now.
Okay. Bye-bye.